been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting live from Mercedes-Benz of the Woodlands. Shout out to Mr. Bob Milner for having our show, hosting our show here. I'm live in studio today with Dr. John Newbold. John is of the with the College of Business Administration at Sam Houston State University. Shout out to Richard Rector of Green Bank. He's in the house today. How's it going, Richard?
Well.
Yeah, glad to have him in. And our special guest today is Mr. Dan Altum of the Woodlands Young Learners Academy. And as we sat here and had a chit-chat getting ready for the show, we found out, man, this guy's got companies going on. He's an entrepreneur in many different ways. So, yeah, he was sandbagging on a few of his companies. Any other ones that you failed to disclose before the interview, Dano?
Is the IRS going to listen to this?
No. Yeah, so we think we're going to learn a lot from you about your interview. We're going to do a deep dive on the Woodlands Young Learners Academy and then learn a little bit about more your background and some of your other businesses. And so before we do that, just wanted to check in at the college there. Dr. John, what's new with the university at Sam Houston State?
Well, we've started back now for the spring semester, and I'm here representing the entrepreneurship program there and Jamie Collins. And Jamie's been working through the break on coordinating with businesses in the area and other schools that have entrepreneurship programs, trying to improve the way we engage with the community and with local businesses. And so I'm happy to be here because this is one of the things that we're trying to do to try to get more involved in the community. So.
What a great way to get engaged. So, yes, special shout out to Jamie Collins at the Entrepreneurship Degree Program there. Professor Chip Matthews and Mitchell Museum, the Dean of the College of Business of Sam Houston State. So, hey, we want to encourage you, professors, and bring us some students. Let them come here and listen, because this is really, I think, one of the most dynamic learning opportunities for a young aspiring entrepreneur. You know, besides the textbooks and the lectures and all of that, here's the rubber meeting the road. Here's somebody today, Dan Altum, who's actually gone out and done it. Now, tell us a little your background, Dan. You grew up a farm boy out in West Texas, right?
Well, it was out west. I don't know about on the farm. But yeah, we were out in Abilene, Texas, and went to Texas A&M and got a degree in finance from there, and then came on to Houston.
Now, any self-respecting Aggie's got to give us a whoop or something, right? do we get a whoop from an Aggie?
Yeah, class of 96, Giga Mags, yeah.
Class of 96, yeah. So you went to Texas A&M, and then... Now, tell us a little bit about, let's go ahead and jump in, a little bit about how your journey as an entrepreneur began.
Oh, goodness. Well, I grew up around it. My parents and my family and everybody's been an entrepreneur of some kind of another since I was born, I guess. But so when I got out of college, my goal was to not be an entrepreneur, but I went to work for a small company and then moved on to a separate company and then ended up starting the Woodlands Young Learners Academy and have had a number of other businesses in the meantime. And it's just kind of happens to you.
Yeah, so you think that was just in your genes all along, and you thought you didn't want to be one, and then you couldn't resist, or you spotted an opportunity, or
apparently, like I walk into even restaurants, and it's kind of like, well, man, I wonder how much that plate of food cost, and it's like I can't help myself but to go through and try to figure out, what's going on and how to see if you can turn it into some money somewhere.
That's what I was wondering, because of your finance background and everything, whether or not you probably look at things and kind of try to quickly size them up and in terms of what the business model is and things
right,
like
it drives
that.
My wife crazy. She's like, can't we just go someplace and enjoy it for what it is rather than trying to figure out how they're making money?
Yeah. I think it's a gene thing. I do. And, there's people listening that may aspire to be an entrepreneur. There's also maybe listeners here today that they're entrepreneurs themselves. They're seasoned and they're looking to go to that next level. And so I think that the Shrimp Tank and has got great lessons to learn in all of these different aspects, whether you're starting out or you're a little further along. Now, you have a business partner, Debbie Kashchik. Kaschik?
That's pretty close, yeah. Is that Debbie close Kaschik. Enough? And Ed Ziegler, too. Yeah, both of them, yeah.
Yeah, let's tell us a little bit about your business partners and just a quick shout-out to them.
Sure, yeah. Hey, guys. Debbie and I met at our last real job, is what we call it. And we were out traveling the country doing some things. And, you know, the whole what do you want to do when you grow up conversation started. And she goes, oh, I want to open a school. And I was like, oh, well, tell me more about that. And we get to talking and realize that there's a business aspect to it that she was unfamiliar with and I had a little bit of experience with. And so that's how we kind of teamed up and took a shot at it. And after a few years of working on it, it worked out.
Can I ask a question there? Because we talk to a lot of people who have ambitions to be entrepreneurial. And part of, I think, the issue that they have is that they feel like they're all alone or they're kind of nervous about doing something all on their own. And so a lot of people might gravitate to wanting to have a business partner. If I have a friend or somebody and I can start, which is what you did with Debbie. But my question is more, at the time that you did that, did you define what the roles were that you were going to do or you know, so when you, it's good to have a partner
roles and
somebody
and
who you're sharing some of the concerns with, but did you have to iron out roles and responsibilities
so
at some point?
If and when I start another business, which is probably likely, I'll definitely be more proactive about that. We had such a great relationship when we first got started that we didn't do that. Here in the last few years, though, we've actually, you know, we work with a business coach and go through some yearly training where we spend some time really hammering that out. And part of that was driven by we confused our staff, you know, because we knew what was going on, but they didn't know what was going on. And we did a bad job of communicating that. And so by hammering that out and who's responsible for what, now our staff knows who they need to go talk to get a problem solved.
Okay. That's a great point. We were talking about staff having a vision, communicating the vision to your staff with Dr. Michael Cimino in an earlier interview and how important that is. And so it sounds to me like Debbie maybe had a harder vision for this school that, and yours was maybe more as a business person's perspective, like, hey, we can make money in this thing, right? tell us how that reconciles or kind of, you know, how that came together.
Yeah, she's probably laughing right now. Her vision was to have a little red schoolhouse, you know, perched on the hill in the pasture, you know, where kids came and they did the school year thing and life was wonderful. And we kind of started digging into the numbers and it's like, well, the economics for that just aren't going to work for us. So that's how we became a full service year round, you know, 6 to 6:30 type deal where we have the full gamut of things for childcare and a preschool. That was, you know, we had to reconcile it, but we've done a good job.
Now, are you successful partners because you share different skill sets or, you know, how did you kind of divide those things up? Like you do this, I do that.
That was kind of where our partnership came to be was, you know, she had a certain education background and vision and idea of what she wanted to do in a preschool. And I could kind of assist and help and fill the gap on kind of all the other things like making the business work. And it's funny, actually, banks even ask us, one of the first questions they ask is, well, so you've been in this partnership for 10 years, you know, how's that working out? You know, because the more I learn, the more you do see a lot of partners not work out so well, you know, and we've just been real fortunate to remain good friends. And, you know, and if we're angry, we're not married. So, you know, we can go home to not each other and that works out pretty good.
You know, you're our first Shrimp Tank guest that has your personal banker here just with a close eye on you, making sure that you're, you know, you're right on point. And so I think that's pretty awesome because, well, let's kind of make that a segue into I assume you had a business plan.
Absolutely. It was really big, and we had a whole bunch of copies because I stopped at every bank I saw to drop one off.
Until we, you know, we found Richard at Green Bank, but... So with the business plan, did that involve you guys raising capital? Do you have investors or do you just private loans? Or how did you kind of pull the money together to launch your idea?
Right. So we started one company and have purchased two, and we're about to expand with this fourth location. And all of them are financed through SBA financing through the bank, which requires certain equity down and into the deal.
But they're higher loan-to-value loans, I mean.
Right, that's right. Yeah. That's why we end up going that way. You know, the banks have always said, you know, well, we'll look at it from a, you know, traditional banking standpoint, but we always end up with the SBA, which... The SBA has not been, you know, I'm not scared of it. I know a lot of people get, you know.
It's a pain, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a pain, but I'm good at jumping through hoops, so it's no big deal. But yes, we have to go raise capital because we don't have much of our own. So we have, you know, it's kind of a friends and family deal and people who know about us and learn about us and believe in what we're doing. And because, you know, childcare is not ever going to be a financial home run for anybody, but it's a nice, steady, stable kind of deal. And so people sometimes want to do that, and it's been a success.
So if you're listening and you're a young, aspiring entrepreneur, one of the takeaways should be that, you know, there's a decent chance that you're going to have to raise capital. But today, there's more access to more capital than ever before. There's friends and family, like you talked about, and some people do some level of bootstrapping. There's crowdfunding. There's private bank financing. There's all different kinds of ways to raise capital. But an entrepreneur sometimes has to raise the money and go ahead and get started instead of, you know, you could work a job for 30 years right. trying to save enough money to, right, go start a business.
Right, that's right.
Yep. So you guys, tell us a little bit about your banking relationship and how important that is to your business.
So we've moved banks a couple times. Our first bank was because they came across, it was the 42nd bank that I dropped off a business plan to, and they finally decided to do the deal with us. So we banked there for a while, but I'll tell you what, we've been through big banks, small banks, but our best banking relationship so far has been with Green Bank. You know, Rich is here, obviously, to keep an eye on that, but it's been they've really been great to us, and they really have a personal attention to. We finally found what we were looking for in a bank that cared about us and what we were doing and would pay attention to us, and we weren't just a bank account number. So it's been great.
Translation? You got to kiss a few frogs to get a prince sometimes, right? Yeah. So, all right. So, so how many years have you been in business?
This August will be our 10-year anniversary.
Oh, wow. 10-year anniversary.
And how long ago did you acquire the other two?
We expanded the first time in 2012 and then in January of 2014.
So it sounds like you have a model now, with your finance and banking relationships background, entrepreneurship, heart and spirit, I'm guessing that you're thinking scale.
Well, but we actually, with our business coach, had scheduled, once we get this fourth location opened up and kind of planted and know what's going on, that'll be the true kind of footprint for something going mm-hmm. forward, and we're going to have a little executive meeting and decide if that's something we want to, you know, say, hey, can we open up 10 of these in affluent communities all over Texas, or, you know, what's next for that model? Because it's going to include some neat things, not just a preschool.
Yeah, I was wondering if you might be able to comment on this question, which is, a lot of people, when they want to start their first business, they sort of start smaller, they put their toe in the water, and they open up one school. After you've acquired a couple, now you've got three, I was wondering whether sometimes an entrepreneur might actually be guilty of thinking too small. In other words, the business might work better if they had started out with three because of the scale effects and things like that.
I could see in certain circumstances where that would. It's been a good growth plan for us because of the capital issues and some of the financing deals. I don't know if we could have opened up three all at once.
Okay.
You know, so it's had to been a steady step-by-step thing, you know, until maybe we get to the next level of business where, you know, we can go get that giant line of credit from somebody to go and plan a bunch of schools all at once. But for us, it's been a growth deal.
There's a cost of capital, and the more proven your concept is, the more attractive that cost of capital becomes to a business owner. Ultimately, your other locations, you may not have to have any of your own money in these deals if your track record is solid enough, Dan. But I'm intrigued with what you said about having a business coach. And I was wondering if you could shed a little light on that for us, because first of all, I'm not only intrigued, but I'm impressed, because I think a business coach can offer some unique perspectives and an outsider's look and view. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience working with a business coach?
Yeah, you know, I've been real fortunate to have a bunch of mentors in my life since, you know, high school. You know, some guys that really taken me under their wing and helped me with some business thing. But this was a true business coach relationship. Her name is Kathy Light. She's out of Dallas, KathyLight.com. We got to a point where back in the day of one school, you know, we knew everybody kind of knew what was going on. You know, it was kind of a small little group. But once we grew into this three school, 100 employee kind of deal, and we were confusing people as a management team, we realized we needed to do something. So we hired her and started a relationship, and she came in and did a company-wide assessment on strengths and weaknesses and kind of what was going on with us, and really helped us break it down into, you know, here's what I'm identifying as themes of what you guys need to work on. And one of those was, you know, communicating our roles of what we do as executives or management to our staff, so they knew what to do and who to go ask for what.
Now, just curious, does she operate from a platform, or is there a backdrop behind her? You mentioned strengths and weaknesses. Makes me think, you know, was it the Briggs?
Briggs Stratton stuff? Yeah.
Briggs Myers.
Briggs Stratton. That's an engine.
And then there's
well,
the whole Geno Wickman traction, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. School of Thought and series and all of that. Is she a like a or she create all of her own tools?
She's real keen on the is it Tom Rath is the Strengths Finders, Strengths Finders 2.0. Uh-huh. So we and actually every member of our company went through that quick little exercise, and it gives you a quick little assessment of you know what everybody's got going on, and then she uses some tools to blend those five strengths that you end up with across, and kind of, well, here's how your teams, and here's what some of the dynamics are going to be, and why maybe they, you know, it's like this, or like, you know, what's going on between everybody.
I'm curious, did as an outcome of that, do you screen potential employees differently than before you?
We've talked about doing that, and I know some of my friends that hire folks fairly regularly do some of that. We don't actually put them through the Strengths Finders as a condition of employment, but usually soon after, or at least before our annual meeting kind of thing, we have everybody do it.
Okay.
You must have some due diligence process of hiring people as you're working around young kids that, you know, for security measures, and how do you do that?
Well, so someone that's mandated by the state, the Department of Family Protective Services, but they, you know, they do the electronic fingerprints with the FBI, a DPS check, some of those kinds of things. We're real big on checking references. It's amazing sometimes what people put on their resume as a reference, and then what that reference will tell you. Mm-hmm. It always kind of baffles me sometimes, but yeah. You know, we try to do as much, and we're okay at hiring. You know, we could always be better, but we've got a great, great, great group of people that work at the schools.
So looking down the road for you and Debbie, you know, 5-10 years from now, where's this business? Where are you taking this business long term?
The Young Learners Academy of Cancun or something? No, I'm just kidding. here in the next year or so, you know, we'll figure out exactly kind of where we want to grow, or if, you know, sometimes it's a work-life balance. You know, maybe we're kind of at a place in our life where we're kind of good where we are, you know, and then that's always a choice too. You know, all the three of us partners, we have kids and families and those kinds of things, and there's only so many hours in the day and weeks in the year.
Yep. So in 5 years from now, are you set on a certain sort of target within 5 years, or is this all just kind of let's reevaluate every 12 months?
Well, after this next location we get opened up and we have our kind of little executive retreat, that's going to be what we work on next, is our three-year plan on what are we going to do? Are we going to plant some more schools? Are we going to be good with what we are? What's next for us?
I've heard 3 years many times from another coach, too, that just said, you know, 5 and 10 years out, that's just too far down the road. You know, that's just too vast. 3 years is a pretty good target for that. Producer's telling me we need to run to a commercial break. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting to you live from Mercedes-Benz of the Woodlands. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin. Joining me in the studio today is Dr. John Newbold and Dan Altum of the Woodlands Young Learners Academy. Don't forget, you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. The Woodlands Young Learners Academy is a full-service private preschool and kindergarten with after-school programs for children starting at 18 months. The building block of the curriculum and core philosophy is to drive each student individually based on their skill, learning, and learning levels rather than by age. We are proud to be locally owned and operated. Please visit our website at twyounglearners.com, or you can call us at 832-257-3563. And we're back live in the studio. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, the radio show for entrepreneurs. Joining me in the studio today is Dr. John Newbold, the College of Business at Sam Houston State University, and also Dan Altum, the Woodlands Young Learners Academy, going on their fourth location, going on 10 years in business. And just while we sat here and prepped for this show, Dan, we were learning a little bit about the Learning Lane. Now, that's another company that you have that is an educational school that caters more towards children with autism.
That's correct.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So we learned about the Learning Lane with the previous owner would have her kids or the kids come through there, and they would end up at our preschool. And so that's how we made that relationship. And then it got time for her to exit the business for some personal reasons, and it just made a good fit. And so we came on board and you know, kind of rebranded it a little bit. And it's been, I thought we made a difference in the lives of kids at our preschools. Some of the things we do, or some of the, I wished I could do it, but some of the things that these therapists do at the Learning Lane is amazing with these children. But we've really been able to expand those services, and we have more kids in therapy now, almost double than what we had a couple years ago when we first started. And so it's been really amazing with some of the tools and capabilities of the Learning Lane to get a hold of these kids and figure out what their parents and get them into therapy and make a difference in their lives.
Yep, that's exciting. So is this a business that's more passion driven, or you know, or is this you know, purely a numbers game?
So we take insurance. So of course you start to get some flack for, oh, it's the big bad insurance company deal, right? But this stuff is so expensive just because of the qualifications and quality of the therapy that the services like us provide. And so, you know, none of what we do is a numbers game. You know, one of the things we discovered with our business coach was that our culture as a whole is always put the child first. So there have been a number of times where we come out there and we make a decision on, well, this is what's best for the kid and for the family. And, you know, if there's some consequences from that, then we'll just have to suffer them along, you know, along with that, just because we're going to do what's right no matter what. So, but the technicians and the therapists that are involved in that, they are definitely some passionate people. They're in it for the right reasons, and you can tell by their work.
Dan, I've got a question going back to the Young Learners Academy. So if I'm a parent and I've got a child and I'm going to bring the child there to see if we might want to place our child there, can you talk about what a typical day would be like and how the experience is set up for the child?
Sure, and it's one of the things that we think make us a little unique in the marketplace. We liken it to like a small middle school. You know, the kids start like in a homeroom with a bigger class and some homeroom teachers in a good ratio, and they do some really neat things in those classes. But during the day, the kids are going to rotate to a computer lab, a science lab, a music room, a gym, a library, and those kinds of things in real small groups with a dedicated teacher to those subjects. So they get some really neat, really small group time in those particular subject matters that really kind of broadens what they're doing and gives them time to change, you know, change rooms, change teachers, you know, all the good things that make your day go better as an adult too.
And do you have the after school care? So for people who are working, how late do you stay open?
Sure, we're open till 6:30, and we have a whole fleet of buses and vans, and they scatter around and pick up kids at, you know, several different locations and bring them back to us.
So I have a question. You mentioned that you have around 100 employees.
That's correct.
That's very different than having a business that's got 4 or 5 employees. A whole different you know, suite of you know, challenges. So, as we talk about the business climate changing, and you know, tomorrow they're going to swear in a new president. If Trump were to call you and say, Dan, what can the Trump administration do to support you as a small business owner down there in Texas? What would you say to the Donald?
The Donald, huh? That's the darkest before the dawn. What would I say to him? That's a good question. You know, I think Texas as a whole is pretty pro-business and a good place to hire employees. You know, I'd ask him just to kind of stay out of it, you know, keep the government in control and let us do our thing.
Get out of the way?
Yeah, get out of the way. I know a lot of times our employees, or employees in general, I think, don't realize the actual cost of employing somebody. You know, there's so many things that go on above and beyond every dollar they earn. You know, also, you know, there's a percentage that goes to a number of different other government agencies, you know, that we could plow back into the business and do some good things.
I'd like to ask a question going back to how you govern the company and everything. You talked about having an executive offsite or whatever, but again, at 100 employees and 3 schools, going on 4 schools, could you talk a little bit about, have you formalized any of the management practices in terms of, do you look at the business on a weekly basis, monthly basis, in any formal way? Do you sit down with the partners and do that? Or how frequently do you sit down with the bank? And is that a formalized process at this point, or is it more informal?
Well, real quick on the banks, you know, all of our loans out there require certain reporting, and so I kind of get saddled with that periodically just to report to that, which is, we keep real good books and we're really good at accounting and that kind of good stuff. So that's,
I mean, do they bother you every month for the P&L and balance sheet?
No, it's usually quarterly or annually.
Okay.
You know, we pay our bills, so that keeps them off our back pretty good, you know. So I've been seeing Rich a lot lately,
because
bankers. I think I've been pestering Rich more than he's been pestering me over there at Green Bank. But I'm kind of, my deal is the finances, and so I've got all that. And
so do you do a quarterly roll up at least, and do you?
Oh, we look at everything monthly.
Okay.
Yeah, and then back to your other question, we meet with the partners all meet weekly, or we attempt to at least. And
okay.
So that way we're getting together pretty often. The FaceTime helps. We'd gotten into a bad habit of, we were circulating amongst the facilities and we would never see each other. And so suddenly, you know, we were managing by texting and you know, bumping into each other in the hallway or something, and that wasn't working out so well.
So I got a question. We're talking about these financials, and P&L and balance sheet particularly tend to be rear view mirror sort of looking. Do you and your partners have any special key performance indicators that you use to in your strategic planning to help you be more forward-looking in your business?
Yes. We broke that down years ago, actually. A business broker, Dan Elliott with Sunbelt Business Brokers, he's been really, really good to me with kind of helping me with some of that before we got on with the business coach. And he's the one that taught me about key performance indicators and some of those things. And, you know, the thing that drives all of our business is, you know, little butts and little seats. And so that's what we use, you know. So we have, we know our capacity, unlike a retail store or something. You know, we're only licensed for so many kids, you know. So It's like, here's our top. How do we get there? And where are we today? And where do we get to in a month or 2 months? Or, you know, we're a little bit seasonal with the school year or summer or whatnot. So, you know, we look at all those things and try to see where we can go next.
There's a whole new vocation about customization of key performance indicators, and then the creation of it's pulling numbers out of your business and creating special customized KPIs to help you and have a better feel for the heartbeat of your business. That's I've found fascinating. I've attended a couple of conferences of that recently. Now, in your business, is real estate part of your model, or do you guys lease?
Well, yes. Real quick on the KPIs, what I've also found interesting as a side note was when I'm able to tease out some good, simple performance metrics and what they mean to the company, and I'm able to display those to at least our managers for sure, it's amazing how fast they get on board. You know, they want to do good for the company and do the right thing and help. And so if you can help them with like, hey, this is where we're wanting to go and this is what moves these numbers, you know, it really is pretty neat to see them go, oh, okay, I want to do that too, you know, and help out with that. To your real estate question, we lease two locations and we'll own two locations. And if we can ever get the right offer together, hopefully we'll end up buying one of those other locations too. But that's not, we don't have to own the real estate for our model to work. You know, it just kind of depends on the situation.
So tell our listeners, you know, how you break that out, how you separate that out, because, you know, businesses oftentimes they'll be real estate based or not. And then you've got this whole other business, which is a real estate business. If someone's not familiar with that, tell them kind of what the approach is.
Sure. We file a whole pile of tax returns because every one of those units is actually a separate entity, legal entity. So we have companies for each of our land ownership, and then we have a company for each of our operating entities. And so, you know, we rent from ourselves in certain situations. And so, you know, the rent there is kind of nice because it's not necessarily market rent. It's, you know, pay the bills rent. So whatever the mortgage and, you know, investor return and that kind of stuff is what the rent is. So that's nice.
It also serves to separate out liabilities and all of that. So if somebody goes after this facility or this business, that they can't bring down the mothership.
Absolutely.
Right.
And we get to keep our, for the most part, our ownership in the operating companies is just us, whereas, you know, our investors are more interested in the real estate because that is kind of a little more understandable.
Yeah.
And they don't have to worry about, you know, if we're out, you know, goofing around and not enrolling kids, you know, as long as we're paying the rent, then what's it matter?
Yeah. Okay.
Can you think of an example, Dan, in running the business and growing it over these 10 years where you learned something surprising about the business and made an adjustment to the way you were doing it, where you said, why is this happening all the time? And all of a sudden you realize, oh, well, we need to change this policy.
Right. Well, this is going to be a non-answer, but we actually encourage everything we do for everybody to always ask why. You know, why are we doing this, and is there a better way to do it? You know, so we try to apply that,
I like,
to everything.
That.
Yeah. You know, and then, of course, we have to look at it, well, is it cost effective to change? Is it scalable? Is it that kind of stuff? But we try to apply that to everything because the worst answer to me is, well, that's the way we've always done it.
Yeah, yeah. And do you solicit feedback from your from the parents? Do you get some sort of evaluation from them as to how happy they are?
Well, sometimes it doesn't matter if we solicit. No, I'm just kidding. We try to. We try the whole survey thing and those kinds of things. A lot of times it's difficult to get a lot of feedback. So, we have to go on a small sample. We definitely try to get feedback from our staff, you know, because they also hear what the parents have to say too, probably more than us sometimes. You know, there's a... you know, maybe a ruckus in the back, but once the parent comes up to the front, everything's fine again. And it's like, well, what happened? You know, so they can give us some feedback on what to do.
By the way, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, where we interview Houston's best and brightest business owners all across the state of Texas. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin. Joining me in the studio today is Dr. John Newbold of the Sam Houston State College of Business and Dan Altum of the Woodlands Young Learners Academy. Don't forget you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com or find all of our shows and Dan's show in particular on iTunes. So a couple of more questions for you, Dan. Sounds like that you guys, you and your partners, that you're building this great business and that you have a certain culture in your company. And could you tell us a little bit about that and then how important you feel is to communicate a culture to your team?
I think it's huge. And that's something I didn't know when we went into the business. It surprised me how much, after a few years, I realized how much my attitude could impact the whole facility. You know, if I'm in a grumpy mood, then suddenly other folks are in a grumpy mood. I didn't realize mm-hmm. it was that big of a, you know, I was like, I'm up in the office. What's it matter? You know,
but you don't seem like a grumpy guy. I know.
Well, it's few and far between, but, you know, I have my days. You know, I usually just stay away from the office on those. No, I'm just kidding. You know, it is a big deal. And so when we kind of put our finger on that, maybe that's some of the reason why we're unique too, is we have a real family atmosphere. You know, we deal in kids. So, you know, it surprises me that not every school may seem like that to parents. But, you know, we really try to be a family and treat our staff like family and act like a family. So we fight like a family too. But, you know, we get through it like mm-hmm. a family. So that's kind of the defining piece of our culture is the whole family atmosphere.
Yep. Are there any business books that you would recommend to a young aspiring entrepreneur that just said, hey, you know what, I've read a lot of books, but here's one or two that maybe you ought to make sure that you check off?
Man, you know, I'm a bookworm for sure. I stay away from bookstores because I come out just with piles and piles of books. But, you know, right now I'm started a book just the other day called Meetings Suck. I hope that that's actually, you know, no. going to be good. Now, one of the best books when we were first getting started was actually some Jack Welch books. I just liked his attitude and mentality about, you know, always striving for excellence and just making things great.
Yep. Okay. Producer's telling me we need to run to a commercial break. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast. Don't go away. We will be right back. According to a recent Forbes business article, 9 out of 10 business owners are overpaying their taxes. Ouch! Don't let that be you. Contact the team at Provident and explore how you can pay only what you are legally, morally, and ethically required to pay. After a simple 15-minute no-obligation assessment, we'll determine if we can substantially reduce your tax burden, and if so, we'll develop a tax savings plan using our exclusive tax blueprint. Visit us online at providentwealthllc.com or call the office at 281-466-4843. And we are back with the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting to you live from Mercedes-Benz of the Woodlands. Special shout out to Bob Milner for hosting us on a rainy January day. Thank you for having us in the dealership here, Bob, and in your special nice conference room. We so much appreciate that. Joining me in the studio is Dr. John Newbold of the College of Business at Sam Houston State University and Dan Altum of the Woodlands Young Learners Academy. And we're doing a deep dive on Dan's business, his journey as an entrepreneur, and his company here in the Woodlands. And you guys have, you sound like you're very well structured from a business planning. You know, you have a finance degree from A&M, you've got a background in it, you're partners, and you have a plan to grow, you have consultants. And what would you say are some unique challenges to your particular business, Dan?
Oh, you know, trying to keep everybody happy. That may not be unique, though. You know, hiring, because, you know, one of my things is happy staff is happy kids, and happy kids means happy parents, and happy parents means they keep writing checks. So, you know, it all starts with them. And so we try to do our very, very best to support our staff and to hire good people and to make sure it's a good culture and a good fit and the teams all work together. And so, you know, I'd like to say that, you know, whether it's a parent or not, we're trying better as to that we focus so much on making sure that it's a good place to work, you know, is our biggest focus.
And if you have 100 employees, you probably have more experience in hiring people than the typical small business person. If you're a small office and you've got 5 or 10 people working there, you probably don't hire as many people. So what are some of the keys to hiring good people?
You know, for us, and this is going to, you know, it's non-metric based sometimes, you know, it's, you know, you look at their resume and we try to hire experience. That's real important to us. We'd rather pay for experience than deal with, you know, the turnover, especially in our business. You know, parents often move schools because they see, you know, 6 different teachers in 6 weeks and they're not happy with that anymore. And it's tough, you know, I mean, we're not a high-paying industry, and you know, it's slanted towards women, and so a lot of times, you know, a lot of the choices of their careers are, you know, upon a, you know, higher-earning husband or something else going on in life, and so we try to avoid that turnover just as much as possible. But we've seen so many people over the 10 years that a lot of times, you know, somebody can walk in and it's like, oh man, they're a good fit for XYZ, or I don't know, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but we try to vet them as best we can, and because we want them to be successful at our company. And so, you know, we want them to come in with a good fit and it not, and be set up for success and not for failure.
And how do you keep up with the evolving nature of education and everything? Because they continue to come up with new learning about education, particularly preschool and all that kind of stuff. So does your partner keep a hand in that, or do you
guys? I was trying to think of a good joke to say, well, Debbie, should we could get her on the phone or something. Yeah, that's kind of her realm. You know, she's got a master's in gifted and talented education, and so that's just kind of her thing. And so she works with our teachers on a daily basis, trying to get in there and make sure we have the best and newest techniques for the classrooms. And, you know, we don't use a canned curriculum. I don't know if that's a phrase you guys might be familiar with, but, you know, a lot of times a school will, you know, buy a curriculum or whatever, which is fantastic, but just because mm-hmm. of our physical facility where you're getting to rotate around and do some of those neat things, we have to develop our own. And so the teachers really get into that, and they have their daily lesson plans, and it all breaks down from a bigger vision for the year on what we're trying to learn, and then they tone it down all the way to the daily lessons on what they're doing for their kids that day.
And have you, over the 10 years, have you changed the way you've approached, you know, setting up the schools and everything? So you alluded to the sort of the middle school thing. Has that always been like that, or did you evolve to that at some point?
That was actually that's how we wanted it. That was the vision, was to have that. And it caused some problems with, you know, getting started, because we couldn't find a facility that was quite right, or had the right square footage, or just kind of wouldn't work out. So we spent 2 or 3 years, you know, between kind of trying to get started and actually getting off the ground. And that was one of the big things, because we had a vision, and that was what we wanted to do. And that's what we did. And so this next facility, hopefully we'll see if we maybe got it right with the real layout of the final deal.
All right.
You sound like you and Debbie definitely have some offsetting and skill sets, which make you well suited for being great business partners. And that sounds like one of the key things to your success. Could you tell us a little bit about how you and Debbie do approach marketing and, you know, bringing, you know, new families into the business?
Sure. We learned a hard lesson, maybe in our third or fourth year of business. We thought we were going to be all full for the fall, and man, we were, you know, toasting big time already. And we realized, you know, we'd made some mistakes on kind of how we were tracking and anticipating that. And so after we got started for the school year, we realized something was up, and we didn't have the enrollments that we thought. Well, you know, by the time you put your foot back on the pedal to start the marketing machine again, you know, it was 90, 120 days before we started seeing the people start coming back in and visiting and touring and that kind of thing. So the lesson we learned that quarter was never, at least for us, never ever take your foot off the gas for marketing. Mm-hmm. So we changed, instead of kind of direct marketing, we do more, you know, you'll see our logo at the ice rink, or we'll sponsor a community event, or we try to stay involved with the chamber or various things just to have our company's name and us out there and to be able to do stuff like this. You know,
it sounds like your buses might give you some exposure too.
Running around with the buses. So just in kind of little places to have a market presence. You know, our deal is we don't want to be the only place you visit. We just want to be one of the places you visit to come in and look mm-hmm. for a preschool for your child.
Yeah, that sounds very, you know, open, and, you know, that you're not knocking your competition and all of that. You're saying, hey, go take a look, go check it out. Mm-hmm. We think there's a good chance that you're going to want to come back here. So, Dan, what would you say to someone who maybe they've tried and they've had a setback? I don't want to use the word fail, because as I interview successful business owners, and I interview them about their success, what I hear oftentimes is, you know, all of the heartache and the blood, sweat, and the tears that took to get to this place. So failure is such a permanent word. But maybe someone that, you know, started a business and they got knocked off, they had a setback. What would you say to that person to encourage them to pick themselves up and try again?
Well, for me, you know, I've had plenty of failures. I use the word failure. It's okay. You know, and it's a good teacher. And, you know, I'm the positive Polly in the bunch a lot of times, and always try to look for that silver lining, or what did I learn, or how can I be better? Or, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, well, that's not going to work. I'm not going to do that again, you know. But mm-hmm. No matter what, to me, there's always a lesson to be learned in there that you can take and be better next time around. And that's the key. There needs to be a next time around. Don't just give up.
Yeah, failure is a permanent word, and usually it's not the right word. Usually, you know, it's a setback. How about you know, looking around at other communities? I mean, do you guys plan to try to expand and build out, you know, from the Woodlands, or you know, like a lot of companies, once they have proof of concept in Houston, they may say, okay, now we're looking at Dallas, we're looking at Austin, San Antonio. Are you thinking along those lines?
Well, that's going to be one of the conversations with this, you know, fourth location, because it's the fourth location that I keep referencing is going to combine a preschool and our clinic for the children with autism. And so it'll be a unique facility where we have kind of this symbiotic relationship that should be really, really good for everybody. Mm-hmm. And if it works, then we just have to identify why does it work here and where would it work better and what community does it work in. You know, one of our child care centers is on 1960, which is not too far from here, mm-hmm. but or Cypress Creek Parkway, I guess. And, you know, but it's a different market and a different deal, and, you know, the brands don't necessarily overlap. And so, you know, we would have to really assess on, okay, if we try to penetrate a whole new market, what's that look like? We can't just build on what we already have going on in our name recognition in the mm-hmm. community.
How many hours of work do you week?
Yeah.
So I have a reputation to live down to, you know, so I don't know if I can share that. No, I'm just kidding. You know, a lot of my friends think I'm just kind of, you know, wear shorts to work and kind of, you know, bum around sometimes. But I think what a lot of people don't see is maybe the after hour stuff or before hour stuff or the weekend stuff or all the things that, you know, you have to do, and you have to do it. And so you got to sit down and do it sometime. So I don't know. There's some
Is it more than you want to admit to?
It's probably more than I even realize, but yeah, probably so.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you talked about having a family and everything like that. So, work-life balance. Is there anything in particular you do to try to maintain it, or?
Well, the trade-off is, you know, you get a lot of flexibility, or at least in my job at our company, you know, I don't necessarily have to be on site 9 to 5 kind of thing. You know, we're open 6 to 6:30, so it's we have the swing shift thing going to a degree and that kind of thing. So there's always something going on, and you know, we're at a lot of after hours events and weekend events and those kinds of things. So sometimes if it's a Tuesday afternoon, you know, Valentine's party at my daughter's school, then I'm gonna go, you know, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. So
at this point, Dan, do you ever sitting here with your gonna have 4 units, do you ever think about if you had gotten that job in the big corporation? And you look at the amount that you're working now and what you're doing, have you ever thought back and thought what that would be like, or if you would enjoy it at this point?
Oh, yeah, I wonder a lot, because, you know, sometimes, like, man, I wish, you know, it's like the lonely at the top. Sometimes I think or crushed at the bottom, you know. But, yeah, I don't know if I would have been successful or if I'd have gotten fired a lot. You know, I don't know if I'd be a good employee anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat. And I can tell you that as an entrepreneur myself, I've looked around at a lot of my friends that have come up through the corporate ranks. They've done very well for this. Sometimes I've asked myself, man, why am I over here, you know, knocking my head against the wall? Mm-hmm. But when you have that gene, there's just not another way of life. Now, mm-hmm. in our interviews, a common phrase or term that comes up is passion. People talk about passion for their business. And last week, we talked a little bit about the dark side of passion. The dark side of passion can be, man, I love my business so much. I'm so passionate about it. It's not even work. And it's easy to, you know, to just be, you're doing it all the time.
To get consumed.
To get consumed. Too early, you know, you're working early in the morning, you work until late, the weekends and all of that. How do you guard against that?
I mean, I would dread the day that I wake up and go, oh, man, I got to go to work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm on purpose about setting aside time away from the business, you know, even if it's just a Sunday afternoon, because, you know, with technology and everything going on, I mean, it's really easy to get caught up where it's just kind of the trickling, you know, it's almost, you know, water torture or whatever it is, you know. But so, you know, I make sure and I'm on purpose about saying, hey, this is my time that I'm not, whether it's family or my time or, you know, going to the golf course and leaving my phone at home accidentally, you know, mm-hmm. Or whatever, you know, I just try to make sure you get that time where you're not answering emails and answering the phone and taking care. It'll still be there, you know.
Yeah, and kind of related to that, Dan, you know, a lot of times when you're running a business, you're probably feeling like that guy that spins the plates on the Ed Sullivan Show, and you're trying to keep everything going. Every once in a while, you'll have a day where a couple of plates will fall and break. How do you bounce back from having one of those kind of days where something didn't quite go?
Right.
How do you keep it from...
You know, I get stressed out. You know, I get stressed out sometimes because it's like, man, I'm just letting people down every which way I turn now. Instead of, and I, you know, if I got paid for being busy, I'd have a lot more money in my pocket. You know, but mm-hmm. You know, you just kind of got to pick yourself back up again and say, okay, you know, again, what did I learn from that? And what can I do better? And how can I not make that mistake again? And, you know, did I accomplish anything good during that process? And how can I make it better?
So does a partner help in that, on that kind of thing? And when you talk about being lonely, like I would think you might, that Debbie might notice, or you might notice that she's got her dauber down. Like, come on, it's all right.
Yeah, she, you know, she for sure can pick up on my moods. We've been together for long enough now, and so she's like, "What's going on?" And you know, "What can we do?" And you know, we can go get some ice cream or something like that.
Okay, I have one more comment on that, and then the producer's like, "She's giving me the stink eye," and you know, where she rolls her hands in a thing, and she's like, "She's like, hurry up, okay." Yeah, because we got to wrap it up here pretty quick. But, you know, we're talking about passion consumed in your business. But if you're familiar with Dan Sullivan, one of the greatest coaches that has the great company called Strategic Coach, he forces or requires that people take a certain number of free days. And that's where you're completely disconnected disconnected from your business. And it sounds counterintuitive, but the concept is that you come back to your business so much more refreshed and energetic and inspired if you have a chance to completely disconnect on a planned, strategic, and periodic basis. So it's been a great interview, Dan, and thank you so much for being a guest on the Shrimp Tank. And how would our listeners get in touch with you or your business if someone wanted to reach out to you?
Oh, sure. You can check out our website at www.theyounglearners.com or twyounglearners.com. Check us out on Facebook. I think we're on LinkedIn, Twitter, all that kind of fun stuff. 832-257-3563 is the phone number, or come by and take a tour.
He's not hard to find. It's been a great story. We're so excited to learn more about your company. And Dr. John Newbold, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Representing the College of Business of San Francisco State University. Thank you. Big shout out for Bob Milner and Mercedes-Benz of the Woodlands. And we're looking forward to seeing you live on the Shrimp Tank next week.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do, and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie, keep going. You know the saying, you can reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front, I'm a lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.